Blog Talk Radio.
Relationships 360 degrees, and thanks for joining us this evening. I'm Tiffany Williams-Jallo, producer and host of this program, which airs Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern right here on Blog Talk Radio. The legendary Stevie Wonder singing about his lovely newborn daughter a day after we celebrated National Daughter's Day. Many of you took the opportunity to post tribute photos of your daughters on Facebook and Instagram yesterday. It was great to see, especially posts from fathers who said they were proud to be fathers to girls. It's something I'd like to see society encourage more of, which is why I've decided to do this show, discussing how we as a society can support fatherhood so more of our children grow up in homes with their dads. We know there are many benefits to having a father in the home, and tonight I've invited Dr. Jeffrey M. Johnson to Relationships 360 Degrees to share how he and his organization are helping with this goal. Dr. Jeffrey is president and CEO of the National Partnership for Community Leadership, a national nonprofit organization whose mission is to empower low-income parents and youth through innovative training techniques, effective program management tools, and evidence-based practices. As president of NPCL, Dr. Jeffrey has overseen the planning and implementation of two of the nation's largest social welfare research projects involving men and fathers. Since 1997, he and NPCL convene an annual International Fatherhood Conference that attracts policymakers, family practitioners, and parents from around the world. He was also the Visionary and National Planning Committee Chair for the 100-year anniversary of Father's Day, held at the Lincoln Memorial on June 19, 2009. Dr. Jeffrey has presented at more than 300 conferences and is a recognized authority on matters pertaining to fathers and families, youth development, workforce development, urban poverty, and leadership development. A particular focus of his work has been on the plight of African American men and families. He played a principal role in the passage of the first national fatherhood legislation in Congress, the Fathers Count Bill, in 1999. Dr. Jeffrey has an extensive civic involvement record and serves on many boards wherein he has received numerous service awards. He currently serves as a member of the Board of Advisors for the Morehouse College Research Institute, vice chair of the National Fatherhood Leaders Group, and chair of the District of Columbia Neighborhood College. Dr. Jeffrey also serves as chair of the Men's Fellowship Ministry at the People's Community Baptist Church in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I'm going to stop there and welcome Dr. Jeffrey Johnson to the show. Thanks for joining us tonight,
Tiffany.
Dr. Jeff.
Hi, Tiffany, and hello to your listening audience. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And I think I read that you also won a Peace Prize.
I won an International Peace Prize for my work with fatherhood. This is a worldwide issue, and there's a group that comes together about 40 nations annually. And a couple years ago, I received their highest award for my focus on families in my work with fatherhood.
Okay, so not the Nobel.
No, not the Nobel. No.
I know you've done quite a bit, but not quite there yet, Dr. Jeff.
Not there quite yet.
Okay. Yeah, just kidding with you. But, again, it's fantastic to have you on the show. I think this is a very, very important topic that needs to be covered on Relationships 360. I've done many shows, but I haven't, taken the time to shed the light, on fathers. And so I definitely think that that's something that we should do more of in the society. And your work is dedicated to that. And so that's why I've invited you on tonight to speak to this topic. And guys, out there listening in the audience, as we get into this discussion, if you think of anything, if you have any comments and want to weigh in, you can give myself and Dr. Jeff a call at 714-409-0610. And you can definitely add your comments to the chat room as well. I've opened that up for you guys to utilize as well during the show tonight. Again, the number is 714-409-0610. I will publish that in the chat room as well in case you didn't catch it. So, Dr. Jeffrey, tell us more about your organization, National Partnership for Community Leadership. That's a mouthful.
Well, yes, a mouthful. We go by the acronym NPCL. And
okay.
In the fatherhood field, that acronym is pretty well known. We've been around, it'll be 20 years next year. When we came into existence, the principal purpose for us coming into existence was to really respond to the changes that were occurring in our welfare program. Some of your listening audience may remember that back in 1996, Congress and the president, President Bill Clinton at the time, changed welfare as we knew it. From 1935 till 1995, welfare was a terminal program. In other words, once you became a part of the welfare system, that child did at birth, unless there was something to occur that would bring income to into a home, that mm-hmm. child and that custodial parent would literally be on that welfare program for that entire 18 years. When I say welfare, I mean food stamps, Section 8 housing, cash assistance. All those things are part of our welfare program. And it was a program that was from the birth of a child up until a child was 18. Back in 1996,
wow.
That changed. And the changes essentially meant that welfare was became time-limited. And what I mean by that is that as opposed to being an 18-year program for a child, now it's only 5 years. And in that period of time, the mom also has to work, as a part of getting the child off of welfare. But when that welfare bill was passed in 1996, there was no provision given to work with the dad. And economists have told us for a long time that wealth is generated in two-parent households. Parents work, and share in the financial load. There'll be a period of time during the child's birth that either parent may take off, particularly mom in 90% of the cases. But the point is that the way you reduce poverty is to increase the amount of wealth that parents have coming into the home. But when couples decide not to marry, it becomes a real challenge to get both parents working together on behalf of their kids, including mm-hmm. the income aspect of support that our children need. And so when MPCL set up, we set up for the express purpose of addressing the fatherhood and issues associated with that welfare reform. So when that 5 years ended, that mother or that custodial parent, which in many instances is mom, would not have to have the sole burden of supporting that child financially, emotionally, and otherwise. And so, but in the process, we had to get that dad in the position where, he accepts his responsibility, that we assisted him in overcome whatever barriers that he might have in being a responsible dad, so that we could really make sure that both parents were private resources to their kids. And so since 1996, we've been focused on that mission, and what we've been doing is building the capacity of community agencies, churches, government agencies, community-based organizations to actually work with dads, because our social service and human service system has not been set up to work with dad. This is something that they don't even get in the academy. They don't even get it in their social work school. And so we've had a big job educating social workers, family practitioners, government agencies on how to work with dads in a friendly manner as opposed to just a punitive manner that is really their experience working with child support and some other institutions. So that's
sure.
what we
and,
do.
And can you give us a practical example of how you work with these organizations fathers?
Okay, so for example, you'll have, say, a typical Department of Social Services, all right, let's say in X city, and they are working with a caseload of custodial moms, okay, and that they're responsible in their agency for what they call temporary assistance for needy families, the WIC program, all those programs that we know that are part of welfare, all right. Their job is to get that mom out of their system in less than 5 years. So that mm-hmm. mom is in a position to take care of that child by herself if they don't have the connection with the father. And so what we do is go in and teach that social service agency, this is how you reach out to fathers to make sure they are part of the case also. And that you want to screen these fathers because we're not trying to create a situation where there's a, an abuse situation or domestic violence, situation. You know, but what we were trying to do is make sure that that father, his resource as an economic resource, as an emotional resource, as a nurturing resource is tapped into, as well as his side of the family. Because the reality is that that child needs the safety net of both parents and both parents' extended family members to be successful in life. And you think about it. You know what I mean? It's like, it has been long ago, when neighborhoods and communities raised children together. Even though they were the responsibility of two parents who brought them into the world, neighborhoods worked together to make sure that kids, stayed on the right track, if you will. But the point is that the system, our social service system, was not designed to work with dads. And let me tell you why, Tiffany. Because the assumption, if I take it back to 1935, when this Aid to Dependent Children program was first set up.
And real quickly, so we can, because we have a bunch of other stuff to get through.
Right.
But it
was set up on the basis for widows with children. So the assumption going into our Social Security Act, Title 4A, which Aid to Dependent Children comes from, the assumption was that the father was dead. All right, and so he was never considered to be a part of a household with a poor child. In other words, all right. But times have changed since that time, and we have a lot of fathers, who are involved in lives and their children. They, a lot of fathers are challenged. We hear these terms deadbeat. I would say that there are a lot of fathers out there dead broke. And they want to be they want to be resources to their child, but they just need an assistance, just like you're giving the mom so that she can be in a position to care for her child in a variety of ways. We want to make sure that service is also extended to dads so that both parents end up being the private resources to their child that every child needs and deserves.
So, Dr. Jeffrey, if there is a father that's out there listening that is not necessarily involved in their child's life because, maybe they don't have the financial resources, can they reach out to your organization for assistance?
Absolutely.
And how would they go about doing that?
What they can do, our phone number is 202-600-7817. And what we try to do is to link them to groups and agencies across the country that we have built the capacity to work with those fathers, and they're all over the country. This is something that's been evolving over the years, and there are probably more resources in these communities that the fathers know about. And all we need to do is make those connections for them, and we'd be happy to, connect as many fathers as we can to those groups in their communities that can be of assistance to them.
And I know you gave the phone number, but can they also go out to a website? Do you have a web
presence? They can go to our website. Our website is www.ntcl, N as in Nancy, P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, L as in Larry, Strong Families, it's all one word, ntclstrongfamilies.org. And they can reach out that way. And again, what we don't do, we know who probably does do it. So we'll connect them into the right organization because fathers got a variety of needs, and we want to make sure that we connect them to the right, set of services and to respond to the needs that they have.
Excellent. MPCLstrongfamilies.org. Go there now if you need assistance, and they'll definitely point you in the right direction in terms of, some different agencies and other resources that can be helpful to you in becoming, more involved in your child's life and to, help with rearing and raising that child or those children as well. Excellent stuff there, Dr. Jeff. I want to ask you about, there are fathers, but they're also good fathers. So I wanted to ask you, how does your organization encourage men not to just be fathers, but to be good fathers?
Well, basically what we do, we write curriculums for agencies to use and work with fathers, okay? And these curriculums are how-to manuals in helping fathers be the best dads they can be. And in order to do that, you know, a lot of fathers have personal challenges, you know, that they have to overcome. Sometimes it's a substance abuse problem. You know, sometimes it's an issue of, you know, that they didn't have their own fathers in their lives, and, you know, they still have some challenges associated with that. You know, and let's face it, Tiffany, you know, none of us really go to parenting school. You know, but in the past, you know, families, you know, were such where, you know, your mom and dad was there, and you learn from watching them kind of what to do as you know, as far as a mother and father is concerned. You know, but a lot of those families are not, you know, don't exist today in the ways in which they did. And so hence the need to have these type programs where both fathers and mothers learn how to be the best parents. And so when we talk about mm-hmm. being the best parent, we talk about a father who has access to his children on a regular basis, on a consistent basis, and is a father who gives to his child. And men are more givers than receivers. You know, one of the things that people always often ask me about, you know, in between with regards to Mother's Day and Father's Day, you know, what kind of is the big difference? And, you know, are they, you know, should they be equal? And what, you know, how are they faring? And I would say that Mother's, you know, day is a receiving day for mom, you know, for all the good things that she's done, you know, in the rearing of that child. Dads, even if they rear like mom, dads are more givers, you know, and a lot of guys are embarrassed if they receive a gift. I don't care if it is that tie or those socks or whatever. I'm not saying that children should do that. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
My
but dads,
kind of
we're more givers.
To the
you know
side.
What I mean? We're givers.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's uh-huh. just how that's our DNA. We're protectors, providers. You know, and that's how we're wired. You know, and so.
Dr. Jeff.
Yes?
So should we not get father's gifts for Father's Day?
Oh yeah, I think we should. But I want kids to know that dad may not have the same response as mom, you know what I mean? Because, you know, it's just, you know, we're more givers than receivers. You know, I would say it's important to note that the history of Father's Day, and this is a real, real message out there to men and fathers who have daughters, is that Father's Day was actually started by a woman in 1909 in Spokane, Washington. Her name was Sonora Smart Dodd. And how she came up with the idea for Father's Day was essentially that she went to a Mother's Day service at church, and she was hearing all these, you know, superlatives being expressed about moms, you know, how much they sacrifice, how much, you know, they, you know, just serve as a role model, whatever. But in Sonora's Smart Dodd's case, her mother was deceased. And she said that everything that she heard in that Mother's Day service related to her father, but yet there was no Father's Day. And that's how Father's Day in the United States began.
Yeah, do you feel that Father's Day receives adequate attention, or do you feel that it deserves more attention?
I think that it should be. It probably needs more promotion and recognition. You know what I mean? And I would say it this way, you know, about 3 years ago, Hallmark did a study on how many Mother's Day cards that they produced every year or sent out every year versus the number of Father's Day cards were sent out. And I think the number was like 155 million to 91 million.
But that's because men throw away the cards.
Card purchases, Tiffany. All right.
Oh, okay.
Card purchases, and if you think about it in that way, if there's 155 million cards given to moms, then how many cards should there be for dads?
And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, I know, well, I'm just speaking personally for myself, because you talked about, you know, the reaction that we get, you know, from dad when we give them something. And so the reaction for me in the past for any gift, a card or whatever, is, okay, you get the card and then you lay it on the table or toss it to the side. And so I think maybe children, you know, learn from that. And so they don't, you know, buy the card the next year. I don't know.
Well,
that's just my theory.
I don't know if that's a good theoretical assumption or not. I would just say this, Tiffany, is that how many times have you bought gifts for relatives that they didn't use, but you kept buying it because you wanted to show your appreciation for them?
That is true.
For a friend or relative. And with dad, the same way. What I would say is that I'm not saying don't buy dad the card. It's obvious from Hallmark we don't buy as many cards for dads. But I do think that you know, we have to let dads know that they are valued, they are appreciated. And in the same ways in which in the past a lot of dads didn't show their emotion to their kids and things of this nature, times are changing. And so we are challenging dads to be nurturers and mentors to their kids, you know, to be active in the lives of their kids, and don't just send mom down to the school to the PTA meeting. Dad, you should go too. And so these things are changing, and I think that those are some positive changes. You know, when I was raising my own children, and they're, you know, they're grown adults right now, but I was involved in everything, and I stayed actively involved in their lives until they graduated out of college. I was a ready resource for them. All right, and maybe that was non-traditional, you know. But the point was is that, you know, you want to be there for your kids, and part of, you know, really being there to support them is not just thinking that when your kids are young and in elementary school that that is the time that you are actively involved. No, you got to stay actively involved in your children's life, you know, throughout the life course, you know, whenever they need you. And we got to teach fathers that, you know, it's okay to do that, and that your children will love you for that, and that if they buy you a card, accept the card, you know, because even though I indicated that that is a wiring or socialization that we've had, you know, to be a bit standoffish, to, you know, not, you know, see ourselves as the caregiver, you know, like mom is. There are over 100 studies, Tiffany, that says that having a loving and nurturing father is as important to a child's development as having a loving and nurturing mother. A lot of fathers don't know that.
Well, that's fantastic. So what can we do to celebrate men more on Father's Day and throughout the year, and give them
the
respect and attention
that they deserve? Well, I think, first of all, for example, we got to let men know that they are important, and there are many things that they can do to support their children. You know what I mean? Even if they are having hard times, you know, and don't have a job, there are so many other things that they can do, you know, because looking for work is also something that we want our children to learn. You know, so there's just
so many
things.
So for mothers not to, like, monopolize, like, the nurturing, you know, opportunity.
Right, right. And we got to get mothers to share. You know, because the next sharing becomes even more significant, Tiffany, when mothers and fathers have children and they don't love each other enough to marry.
Okay.
Follow that. Follow my thought here. All right. 7 of every 10 black children born in America is born out of wedlock. 55% of all Latino children born in America are born out of wedlock. 40% of all American children are born out of wedlock, total, black, brown, red, yellow, okay? And the reality is that some of those couples are in romantic relationships, and they will end up either living together and marry. Some of those couples have children but don't have a commitment towards one another. And chances are, in many instances, that child will end up staying with mom, right? You know, particularly if you look at end up staying with mom. So what we want to do is to make sure that mom understands that while she has the custodial care of the child,
the child needs to be exposed to both mom and dad.
Yes.
All right?
I agree.
And getting some moms to do that sometimes is a difficult thing, because a lot of times moms base their caregiving on finances when it comes to dad. And dad means more to that child than just finances. Dad means nurturing. Dad means helping mom out and providing child care. Dad means all those things too. And so what I see often is that, you know, mom and dad get in a power play, you know, and if mom has, you know, regular custodial care of a child, then she has, in some instances, she takes the position that she has more power than the dad, and she can actually regulate how often the dad sees the child, particularly when the real master's gone. And what I'm challenging moms to do is don't use your child as a weapon in that regard, and continue to have the mindset that dads are important. The child, both girls and boys, need their dads, and that and we want to work with mom and dad in having the best co-parenting relationship they can have, even if they decide not to be romantic or married. We still want moms and dads to make a commitment for that child, because the most important thing is that child and having two parents that love them, even if that child has to spend time in two different households.
Absolutely. And if you guys are interested in more on this, I actually did a blog post about not using your kids or to stop using your kids as a pawn with the title of the blog post. And you guys can check that out at relationships360.com. Dr. Jeff, I wanted to get into some questions about paternity leave.
Okay.
Wanted to talk about paternity leave legislation. Do you think it does enough to support men who wish to bond with their newly born babies?
Well, you know, interesting as it may be, you know, I mean, you know, there's a federal family leave policy, you know, that really provides guidance to employers to allow both mom and dad to take time off, you know, and depending on how seniority you have and the position you have in the company, I think, or in the organization, what I mean by that federal government organization, there is legislation, you know, that allows you to do that, and really challenges employers, you know, to make that happen. I think that, you know, what happens in many instances on the father side, a lot of fathers, you know, don't take advantage of it. And the reason why they give for not taking advantage of it is because they don't want it to impact their careers, interesting as it may be. But you have federal programs, that allow for, you know, unpaid maternity leave, and you have state programs or state guidelines that allow for that. But the number one reason why a lot of fathers don't take advantage.
Unpaid paternity leave?
It's unpaid. Now, what we want is paid leave.
Yeah.
That's what we want. We want paid leave. But what those various federal and state programs do, or at least those guidelines say, is that, you know, when the father takes off, you know, he has to get his job back or something similar, and he gets his benefits, you know, there. And he also, gets the same salary, you know. But, you know, so fathers, you know, really do have to, you know, plan on taking off and coordinate it with their employer, you know. And then in those cases where a father is working full-time and he's aware of the family medical leave program and an employer is not going to do it, you know, he can put that in front of his employees, on his desk and say, look, you know, the federal guidelines, because a lot of times when employers don't do it, you know, is that they're ignorant of what the laws and the guidelines are. And the better part of it is that when you work for the smaller companies, generally have more discretion over that, because if you're working for them, you maybe work for them part-time. You know, and that's one of the things that really kind of gets in the way of that, because if you don't work full-time, then, you know, employers are not obligated to do it.
But I think we have to educate.
Okay.
You know, things are better than they used to be, but I think we need to, you know, and there have been federal legislation for paid paternity leave and maternity leave for the last 10 Congresses, you know, but in a couple of times it has passed the House, you know, these things have to be supported by the Senate. And in both instances over the last 12 or 13 years, the Senate has not, you know, passed the House bills for, you know, paid paternity and maternity leave for moms and dads. And so this is what we still got to do. But all I can say, Tiffany, is getting better, and we encourage men to take advantage of it.
So right now you're saying under the Family Leave Act, the paternity leave is also unpaid for fathers?
Yes. It's unpaid.
Okay.
It's unpaid.
And,
so you got to use.
And the time frames are the same for both men and women?
Right. It's about 12 weeks. It's about 12 weeks, yes.
Okay.
It's the same.
Yeah, and what we find is it seems like, you know, men typically take maybe a week or two.
Right. But they got 12.
Because it is unpaid and somebody needs to work.
Right, right. Well, the thing is that some employers even, you know, but again, employers differ in this regard. Some employers actually, you know, pay for it. You know what I mean? But for the most part, a lot of employers
they're
don't.
They're not required to.
They're not required. They're not required
to
pay. You know, and that's the key thing. You know, but even in those cases where there is pay and an employer is willing to allow you to do it, I guess the point I want to make too is that guys generally don't take it because guys, you know, have a more of a focus on their career. I don't want to say more than women, but they do have a focus on their careers more so than women when it comes to issues. And then I think there's a stigma too, you know what I mean? And so, you know, associated with it that a lot of men, well, you know, why should I take off? You know what I mean? But I think the roles are changing, you know, because another happening
well,
in our society is
they're not the ones that are
more
healing from a pregnancy either. So there it is that
right,
issue
and,
as well.
And one of the changes that's occurring in our society is that men are becoming are increasingly becoming stay-at-home dads, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so because, it, you know, in some instances, mom appears to be doing better, you know, when it comes to the job market. And so the decision made by the couple is that mom, you know, takes a job, you know, earning a nice wage, and dad stays home, you know. And so that's happening a lot right now. And so things are changing, and there's nothing wrong with men doing that. You know, but again, some of these things are things that we're socialized to think and do. Part of the work of my organization is to help men think more broadly about what their roles are. You know, it's interesting. You know, we always talk about, you know, what fathers can't do. But I would ask you the question, Tiffany. For example, when it comes to doing hair, right? You know, if I was to ask you about the recent Emmys that we just saw with Viola Davis winning that award for an actress in a drama series, black
mm-hmm.
female winning that award. The first, you know, if I was to ask you who did her hair, what would be the first person to come to your mind, male or female?
Well, in this day and age.
Pardon me?
It could possibly be a gay male. But,
well, but,
you know.
But nonetheless, male, right? A male, right?
Yeah, a male.
And,
uh-huh.
If I was to ask you about who are identified as the greatest cooks in the world, would you think male or female?
I would say female.
Pardon me?
That would be the instant thought to my mind. But, you know,
the
cooking.
The
yeah.
top chefs in the world would be considered female? That's what you think?
Oh, no, definitely men. Mm-hmm.
That's right. So what I'm saying is that, you know, these things about what men can't do hair, men can't cook. Let me tell you something. That goes against, you know, what men are considered the absolute best at, all right? But it only seems like men can't do it when they have kids, okay?
Well, I'm glad that's changing because, you know, you know, traditionally women have been expected to cook all of the meals and that kind of thing. And so I'm glad that's changing. And, you know, society is starting to see that, you know, that role can go to a man or that task can go to a man or a woman. Whoever, you know, wants to do it and is better at it, to me, it makes sense, should do the cooking.
Listen, my dad cooked. Matter of fact, my dad cooked, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But again, these are things that, again, a lot of men today have to be taught how to do and exposed to, because a lot of them didn't grow up in households where they saw that happening, and they don't think that that is the role of a man or a role
and
of a dad. But it is. It always has been.
That. Well, not only that, but, you know, now, of course, you know, there are more women in this country that are the breadwinners, you know, in the household you talked about, more and more stay-at-home dads. That's part of
right.
the reason is because they may not be earning as much as the woman, and so the woman goes out and works. So the roles have, you know, kind of reversed, and so we need to catch up, you know, with what's taking place.
But again, let me tell you a big issue that we got to wrestle with, and this is the issue that we got to wrestle with men and women, is this. When mom goes out there and works, all right, and dad stays at home, that does not make dad less of a man.
No, it just makes for a very wise family.
right. And so we're challenged in some of our faith traditions.
And that could change at any time.
Yeah, I mean, because many of our faith traditions. Right.
So it behooves,
right.
you know, both the man and woman, you know, to be educated, to get their education,
right.
just in case, you know, one person loses their income and the other one needs to go out, you know, and secure employment, you know, quickly. So that
right.
totally makes sense. And let me ask you this question. I do want to take a quick breather, but before
mm-hmm.
I do that, I wanted to ask you about same-sex parent households.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask about that because I wanted this to be
okay.
a comprehensive, you know, discussion of the topic tonight, supporting fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Does this make a difference, same-sex parent households? Does it make a difference in whether or not the children become successful adults and are able
well,
to build healthy relationships?
Well, I have not seen any data to that effect, you know what I mean? And I think that
mm-hmm.
what's more important than anything else, that children have loving parents in their lives, you know, male or female. And so that's my take on that. And so, you know, children need to be covered, you know, and that if two adults, you know, love, you know, come together and provide love to children, I think from what's been preliminarily researched and documented, that those children turn out to be healthy and happy as it might be in a heterosexual couple. You know, but again, that's a controversial thing that, you know, that flies in the face of some of our Judeo-Christian beliefs and those type of things, but there's no data to suggest that gay parents are less loving or children turn out less happy and secure than they would in a heterosexual couple relationship or parents.
Okay, well, let's pause right here and take a quick break, Dr. Jeff. When we come back, Dr. Jeffrey and I are going to be taking your phone calls at 714-409-0610. Weigh in on what's been discussed so far or ponder the question, what causes men to abandon their families? Dr. Jeffrey, I want to know your answer to that as well after this break. So
okay.
think about that.
Okay.
How do I get my husband back?
Why won't my wife have sex with me?
Where can I find a good man?
Is she marriage material?
Why
do
my
kids
hate me? Find answers to all your relationship questions during Relationship 360 Thursday nights, now at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, on Blog Talk Radio. Plus, win relationship resources and tools to help repair, build, and maintain positive, enriching character-based relationships. Set a text or email reminder for the next episode of Relationship 360. Listen anytime at www.blogtalkradio.com/relationships360 or download the show on iTunes for easy listening on the go. Relationships 360 at www.blogtalkradio.com/relationships360. Thursday nights, now at its new time of 9 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Relationships 360 Degrees, Thursday nights at 9 on Blog Talk Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Relationships360 and Facebook at www.facebook.com/Relationships360.
Welcome back to Relationships 360 Degrees. I'm Tiffany Williams-Jallo, your host for this show and tonight's episode, Supporting Fatherhood. It's my opinion that fathers don't receive the credit they deserve, so in the second half of the show, my guest, Dr. Jeffrey, who serves as the president and CEO of the National Partnership for Community Leadership, will discuss ways to change that. If you wish to join in, you can give us a call at 714-409-0610. And, of course, the chat room is open as well. You guys are quiet tonight, so hopefully we'll hear from you guys shortly. We'd love to hear from you. Again, the chat room is open, so if you wish to chime in, you can type your comments there. And, Dr. Jeffrey, I'd like to welcome you back to the show.
Hey. My pleasure.
You're still there.
Yes,
you know,
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, a few months ago, I did a show called Why Men Don't Want to Be Dads. I reached out to you about that, actually. But, yeah, so I did the show Why Men Don't Want to Be Dads. What is your opinion on why some men don't want to be fathers?
Well, I just think that, you know, for the same reason why a lot of women don't want to be mothers, you know what I mean? It's like sometimes it's because, you know, for some, you know, medical issue associated with them, they can't be dad. For some men, they just don't want the responsibility of having to rear children. You know, you always start with the assumption, and this is what I always say to folks, that, you know, when a man becomes a father, you know, and assume that he wants to be the best dad possible first. Assume that first. And then if he's not there or not involved, think about and work with him on what are the barriers that get in the way of him being that dad. Some of these guys have substance abuse problems. You know, some of these guys have big-time financial problems. You know, I know a father in the Baltimore area, you know, who had five kids, and what he would do 2 days out of the week, he would leave home and try to find food in some other setting just so that the food he had in his house would go to his five kids. And so the reason why he wasn't there every day of the week is because two of the days he thought that they would get more to eat if he was not there, you know, eating some of the food that they could eat. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and so they're, go ahead.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
And these are important things because I work with thousands of dads, and I could tell you that the majority of them, Tiffany, want to be the best dad they can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there are barriers a lot of times that get in the way. You know what I mean? If, you know, for example, if a guy got a big time cocaine problem or a crack problem, the reality is that he can't, you know, practice his responsible fatherhood in a way that's going to be, you know, nurturing to his child or to be the best role model for his child. In other instances, fathers don't have the financial, you know, abilities that they think they need. You know, and I'm going to argue to fathers that there's a lot of things that you do for a child other than finances, you know, that you can do. You know, I mean, you can help your child with homework. You can help your child, you know, by, you know, being a good role model in the home. You can, you know, teach your kids, you know, about, you know, different things of life, you know, while you're not working, you know. And so, you know, what I want to make is that not having a job, you know, is no excuse for not being, you know, a responsible dad. There are things you can do until you get a job if that becomes, you know, the big thing that you're trying to, you know, accomplish and to obtain, you know. But I think that, you know, let's face it, a lot of parents who are parents, and I'm going to say it, you know, as I, you know, have seen it, probably shouldn't be parents, all right? And then there are a lot of men and women who don't want to be parents because, you know, I won't say that they are, you know, selfish. I just say that they don't want to assume those responsibilities. But I think that in large part what happens and the reason why you have, you know, families or children born without having two loving parents because when the parents, you know, first start having sex, they had unprotected sex, they did not have a commitment towards one another, and oops, here comes a baby. Oops, here comes a baby. You know, and when that occurs, neither one of them are prepared, you know, to live up the responsibility that would allow both of them to be equal parts and meaningful resources in that child's life. And somehow we have to, you know, get to both mom and dads and let them know that once that child is born, you know, as long as that child is living, you're their parent, and that you have a responsibility for it.
You have to work together. Yeah.
You got to work together, even if you're living in a different household. And if you are living in a different household, you know, that child should be allowed to go to that household and allow that parent to parent that child without the unreasonable, without interference from the other parent. All right? Because, see, it gets real crazy, you know, when couples are not committed to each other, you know, and they get into this whole gender conflict about, you know, who's the best parent and whether or not the child is better off with mom or dad, when the research basically says is that having a loving and nurturing father is as important to a child's growth and development as having a loving and nurturing mom. Not more than, just as important. And so we got to teach men that, but also, Tiffany, we got to teach women that. Because a lot of women actively...
That's why God made two. That's why God made
two. That's right. That's right.
Yes, the man and the woman.
Right. And it's not an either or proposition. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's both. It's both.
That's an excellent point. Thank you. Thank you for bringing you know, out that research in the show tonight to just emphasize, mm-hmm. you know, the importance of fatherhood, which is what this show is about tonight. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, child support. We can't talk
okay.
about this topic without getting into child support. Do you
okay.
believe, Dr. Jeffrey, that our court system in America discourages fatherhood? Do you think that, you know, the child support laws on men are too strict or possibly unfair? Or do you believe the child support laws are for the most part, fair?
Yeah. Again, I think it's important to understand the history of the child support system. You know what I mean? Child support actually started in our family courts back in the 60s. And I would say, for the most part, that child support was set up as a middle-income program. In other words, you know what I mean? The family court was making determinations over men and women who were divorcing, for the most part, and basically said that when a mother and father split, if the father was making more money, which was the case in a lot of instances, you know, in terms of middle-class families, that he could leave, but the income that he would provide to his child would not leave. And that's where child support came from. That's what it's, that's the premise of it. And then it became federal law in 1975. I think that child support, the challenge of child support is that it's a system that has a sorting problem. And let me tell you what the sorting problem is. Let me establish a couple of facts that people probably don't realize. One is that the majority of people or the majority of men who pay child support, who owe child support, pay it. Let me establish that fact. The majority of men who owe child support pay it.
Okay.
But you don't hear about that. All right? What you hear about is the non-payers, all right?
Mm-hmm. And what percentage,
and would you believe,
what percentage of men are non-payers of child support?
I'm giving it to you
right
now, all right?
Okay.
85% of all non-payers of child support make less than $10,000 a year.
Okay.
85% of all non-payers of child support made less than $10,000 last year.
So they don't really, they don't have the ability to pay child support.
What we're going to see is the challenge becomes
help them.
Mm-hmm. Paying for the, you know, because it's almost like you come in competition with the government. You know what I mean? The government provides your child with, you know, with food stamps, with child care, with Section 8 housing, those type of things. And if a man does not earn the income to be able to do that, then he's, you know, a lot of men rationalize the child is better off being at the on the government's dole as opposed to off of his financial resources. And so that's where child support, you know, has some real growth to do, is being able to determine which fathers can pay child support and which fathers can't. And you know, it, because of financial, they're not making the resource to do it. But child support resources should be used to help the guy find a job. And right now what they're doing is experimenting with child support, and they call it a federal waiver program.
And that's
what
you meant by working with fathers, right, Dr. Jeff? That's what you meant by at the top of the show about working with fathers, getting these agencies.
Exactly, because right now there was a Supreme Court decision made about 3 years ago. It's called Turner versus Rogers. Turner versus Rogers. Let me tell you what that law says. It says that if a father can financially demonstrate that he can't pay his child support, he cannot be held in contempt, which essentially means that you can't put him in jail for non-payment of child support if he can't pay it.
But
that's a game changer. A lot of child support officers are not enforcing that. A lot of men don't know that. All right? That's a game changer right there. That's a game changer. All right.
It is, but what about the other part of that is to put them on the road, you know, to, you know, helping them to find the financial resources so that they can.
And that's
be.
Where child support is changing. The child support is actually changing. There's programs going on all over the country in child support that's actually using child support resources, which were essentially set up for collections, and to use those collection dollars, some of those collections dollars, to actually set up opportunities for those fathers to get jobs so they can pay their child support. And then some other things that are happening in child support is that child support, because you got both a federal system and a state system, and so when you accumulate debt, child support debt, you know, what they're actually doing, if a father participates in one of the programs that I'll set up, they'll actually reduce the amount of money owed on the state or federal side. All right.
Okay, Dr. Jeff, let me stop you for just a second because the show is getting ready to end. So I want you to, if you can mention your website again or mention a couple of resources that you think would be helpful to men who may not be able to pay child support and, you know, they need help, you know, with the court system. Or just, you know, men that want to be fathers and they don't have the financial means, where can they get assistance again?
They can call my organization at 202-600-7817. That's 202-600-7817. We can answer some questions over the phone and direct them to agencies that we know of in their communities that can help them. And we want fathers to know that they're not out there by themselves. We have a lot more resources available to us now than we've had in the past. And in any way my organization can be of assistance, that's what we're set up to do, is to connect fathers to their kids and to help them, you know, be in the best position to be the best dad they can be. Give us a call, and we'll certainly help them be the best dad they can be.
And the website again as
it's
well?
www.npcl, that's N as in Nancy, T as in Paul, C as in Charlie, L as in Larry, strongfamilies, it's all one word, .org. www.npclstrongfamilies.org.
Excellent. And, you know, when we're talking about child support, again, you know, a lot of men, you know, have found it to be unfair. And, you know, also we talked about, you know, custody battles, that kind of thing. Traditionally,
right.
You know, custody has gone to the mother. And then
right.
We also talked about, you know, unmarried individuals, you know, having children. Again, people having children out of wedlock as well. And, you know, it made me think of a question of why should single moms, a lot of times, you know, you have single moms using the child as a pawn, that kind of thing, because, you know, maybe she wants the man in her life and he's with someone else and, you know, that kind
right.
of thing. So, you know, in that scenario, why should single moms not work to discourage fathers from being involved with their children?
Because
a lot of times they want to withhold the children
it's
in order to get
good,
back with the dad and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's not good for her, all right, because that means that she has to shoulder the burden by herself. And women have already been the bearers of a lot of responsibilities with families. Why should that continue if the father is fully capable and willing to do that, particularly if he's not a threat to her or to a threat to the child?
Because
all right?
they don't
so
want the
benefit.
Child around the other person, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Right, but say it again now. Say it again.
Because they don't want the child around the other person or they're doing it
yeah,
out
but
of spite.
But the reality is
that,
you can't control that, all right, because
yeah.
if they're not together and they're not planning to get married, he can't discourage her from not being with another person, and she can't discourage him from being not with another person, all right? But if
so
you are a loving mother, loving
one.
Parent, the child will not choose somebody else over their parents. It won't happen. It won't happen. You know, I tell people when I go take them through the training, I said, do you think for 1 minute that my children, if I'm lovingly involved in their lives as their dad, would trade me for President Obama? I would say maybe for a day. But after that, they say, I want my daddy, all right? And the same is true for mom, you know what I mean? And we have to do that. The other part of it is that, you know, the reason why mom shouldn't do it, one, because it's not good for her, because that means that she has to do it all on her own, and she shouldn't be have to do that, all right? Fathers can help out in every way possible. It's only two things that a mother can do that a father can't, and that is actually birth a child and breastfeed. Other than that, everything's negotiable, okay? The other thing is that, you know, when the mother does that, the child loses out. The child benefits, you know, when the father's involved. You know, child development theory essentially proven that when fathers are actively involved in the life of their children from day one through school, that children do better when they start school in the kindergarten in terms of responding to authority. You know, fathers contribute to their language development, to their brain development, and children who have active fathers in their lives, in terms of those students who get A's are more likely to have their fathers in their lives than students who do not get A's. And you might say, well, does the father do that on his own? No. It's the mothers and fathers working together to support their kids. That's the magic. Mothers and fathers working together for their kids. And so, you know, put the kids first in all these relationships and put them in a situation where they can benefit from the love, nurturing, and support of both of their parents. That's how children came into the world. And I notice, you know, some of you listening guys may not appreciate me saying this, but I like to say to, you know, women all the time, listen, he was good for at least one night.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? And so you chose him. This is who you chose, even though it didn't work out, this is who you chose, you know, to have sex with or to make love to, however you call it, and a child was born, and then y'all decided that y'all didn't want
to
do anything else with y'all's relationship.
Yeah, you figured out how to get together, so figure out.
That's
you know,
right, that's
how.
Right. And listen, mm-hmm. and if she didn't say that it was, you know, it was non-consensual, all right? If she didn't say that, that means it was consensual, all right? That means that they both made a decision to do it, and they also decided to do it without protecting themselves against having a child, you know what I mean? And the consequence, the baby is here now. Now both parents, you know, the girl who was, you had the child now has to be mother, and the boy who had the child now has to be father. And I guess what I'm saying also, and this is kind of what we do, mothers and fathers have to be taught how to do that. A lot of them have to be educated to that point to understand the realities of parenting, of co-parenting, and the responsibility on both of their parts to make sure that the child has access to both parents and their resources. Because, again, think about as a child growing up and not knowing either side of your family,
mm-hmm.
either the mother's side or the father's side. You know, you grow up, you know, half of who you are. All right?
Yeah, and
half of who you are. And we,
mm-hmm.
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm
going to
say we're not
going to
get
sure.
to all of it. We're not going to get to all of it tonight. We have a couple of minutes here, you know, left in the program, but man, this is a wonderful, you know, conversation. I could talk to you for hours, but unfortunately, we don't have the time here tonight. So we talked about why single moms should not work to discourage fathers from being involved with their children. What can they do to encourage their ex-husbands, their former boyfriends, and or, you know, the father of their children to play a more active role in their children's lives?
Well, here it is, and sometimes it requires third-party, you know, third person in the room to get it done. But what they have to do is forgive each other. And I mean it in all the dimensions of what forgiveness means, for, you know, for mistakes that they both may have made, and for, you know, whatever challenges that may have prevented them from not, you know, addressing this as a couple in the first place. And I don't mean necessarily a married couple, but if that is the case, fine, if they still have to forgive each other. And then they have to heal. They got to heal, all right, in such a way that they – you know, get over, you know, the hurt of not being with one another, because, you know, somebody may have wanted to be with somebody and the other party decided that they didn't want to be with them. And they're going to have to heal past that, all right? And so forgiveness and healing are very important. And then once they forgive each other and heal, then they need to work out a plan of custody that they both can participate in equally in the growth and development of their child, up to and including making sure that the mother, child is living with the mother, the father still has access to the child, the father has access to the child's school records, the father helps with the child in doing homework, the father helps in every way possible. And the vice versa is true, all right? But we got to get mothers and fathers to put the children first, to put the children first and to forgive each other, to heal, and to put those things behind them, so that they can both be the best parents they can be to those children. And if they don't know how to do that, send them to me. Send them to me. Our program is 16 weeks.
Okay.
16
weeks.
And,
you know, I actually did a show on the power of forgiveness, so you guys can go back and listen to that. I believe it was back in December of last year. We talked about that. And then also the show that followed that was taking responsibility for your past. So, you know, taking responsibility for the situation, you know, that caused the child, you know, to come into the world and owning, you know, that and forgiving yourself for the mistakes you may have made. That way you're not lashing out, you know, at the father, or the father's not lashing out at the mother, and you have this big power play between the two where the child gets caught in the middle, for sure. And, you know, Dr. Jeff, we talked about, you know, the benefits of fatherhood, or you were talking about it a little bit. You talked about, you know, being better prepared for early, you know, childhood education, that sort of thing. You know, this month is National Suicide Prevention Month, which is pertinent to this discussion, and that 63% of teens who commit suicide grew up in fatherless homes. If this isn't reason enough to encourage men to get involved in their children's lives, I don't know what is. What is it about a child not having a dad in their life that makes them, you know, want to end it all?
Well, the thing is that you got a hole. You know, you got a hole in your heart. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? You don't know who you are as a person who has both parents in their lives. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of times when fathers are not involved in the life of their kids when they get older, a lot of them think that it's because of them, and they internalize that, you know, and they get depressed, and then they get involved in, you know, with heavy drugs, they get involved in gangs, they might even contemplate suicide. You know what I mean? And so these are just some of the risk factors that occur, you know, when fathers are not actively involved in their children's lives. You know what I mean? It's like there are many statistics. Children run away from home more. You know, children do worse in school. They get suspended more from school. They get the risk of them going and getting in a juvenile detention facility increases. The increased likelihood of them going to prison increases when father's not there. And I would say, Tiffany, that the magic of having mom and dad involved in a child's life is, you know, is the two parents working together and really, you know, one standing in the gap for the other and being there, and so that the child has total covering. A child could be totally covered in various aspects of their life better by two parents than one parent. That's just reality. You know what I mean? And again, unless there's a threat of abuse or something of that nature, you know, which I have a zero tolerance for, then there's no reason why mothers and fathers shouldn't be working together on this other than the egos that they might have because of a relationship that didn't work between them in terms of a loving relationship that might lead to marriage. And so we've got to keep the children first.
Yeah, forgiveness and healing, those are the keys that you spoke about earlier. My final question for you tonight, I've got to wrap up, Dr. Jeff. For men who are afraid to have children or take care of the ones that they have due to insecurity, inadequacy, or other issues, some of those that you named, you talked about drug addiction, alcoholism, not having financial resources, those kinds of things. What advice can you give to these men that can help ease their fears about being a dad?
Well, I would encourage them to call my office and let me get them enrolled in a fatherhood program. And when I say get enrolled in a fatherhood program, these are 16-week programs. It's for other fathers, some of whom have the same issues. And part of it is just understanding that you're not out there by yourself and that there are ways of doing this. And we create and we teach agencies how to create a classroom setting or a peer support setting for those dads where they can share each other's experiences, learn from one another, and really benefit from some of the good examples that some of those fathers, you know, are exercising, who've overcome some of those phobias about, you know, the type of dad they can be to their children. And so peer pressure in that regard is as influential as peer pressure on the streets. And so I would encourage those fathers, you know, call our office, let us get you enrolled in the fatherhood program, and once you go through that 16-week experience, I think that you will approach this, you'll learn more about being a dad, and you'll learn how to get your attitude in the right place when it comes to parenting, and so you'll be a totally transformed individual when it comes to that. And you may decide that, look, you know, this is not cut out for me, you know what I mean? And if that is the case, you know, we have guardians, we have foster care, because what's more important is that we put young people and our children in a home where where adults or there are caring parents in that home that love them and will nurture them and will help them reach their highest human potential. That is the key. You know what I mean? But we don't need to give up on parents because we have education programs out here right now, you know, that can really help them really sort these things out and then put themselves in a position to be the best dad possible.
Okay, great. And it's National Partnership for Community Leadership. You guys can Google them. You guys can give a phone call. And then hopefully that program, the 16-week program that you spoke about, Dr. Jeffrey, is a free program.
It is a free program. Whenever they call me and I say that program exists in that community, it's free.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us as the guest tonight on Relationships 360 Degrees, Dr. Jeffrey. I definitely enjoyed the conversation. I'm sure the listeners appreciate you sharing your expertise tonight. So thank you again, and you have a wonderful rest of the week and weekend.
All right, thank you, and we're cheering for the parents.
Yes, absolutely. And Relationship 360 family, thanks for listening. Be sure to come back and join us Thursday, October 8th, when we'll have a surprise guest on the show. You'll love this. You'll love it. Let me give you a hint. War Room. Two words, War Room. Until then, hit up the show at relationships360.com. And, of course, be blessed and be a blessing. Good night.